Welcome to Beyond the Arc. My name is Phil Nason. He's Kevin Light, and we're here to talk Memphis Grizzlies basketball. Kevin, how you doing, man?
I am. I'm okay. Okay, I'm preparing mentally for Game 2 tonight. It's getting in the zone.
Other than that, I'm good. Bed and watch it tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I wish that were an option for me.
See, it is for me. I don't cover the Grizzlies. I just do the show. So it's okay. I get what you're doing. I have to watch the Cavs anyway, so I'm not going to have a chance. I'm not even going to the Cleveland game tonight. Shh, don't tell nobody.
Yeah, I think we know how that one's going to go.
Well, maybe, but you know something? We want to thank Maximum Sports Channels for airing this show faithfully every single day. We want to let you know that the Memphis Flyer presents Beyond the Arc. We've done now 71 episodes, I think, or
I think
more.
More than that.
But and it's been fantastic, Ron. Why would we ever want to do anything other than be around the Memphis Flyer? Really?
Well, they keep cutting me checks, so... You know, as long as those clear, we're good.
There you go. As long as they clear, we're good. Yeah. And otherwise, yeah. And I get to work on the show, and I like it. So it's fun. I get to do the show. I'm kind of trying to stall for time because it was a tough night in San Antonio. It was an interesting night. Marc Gasol went off, and I kind of figured he might. But it was really intriguing to me because Tony Allen wasn't there. I knew Kawhi would have a big night, and he's very efficient. It's crazy to watch Kawhi Leonard play.
Yeah, I mean, so much of what the Grizzlies needed to do to win Game 1 came down to stop Kawhi Leonard from beating them. You could argue that maybe they did because he and Gasol kind of put up the same numbers. But, you know, so much of what happened for the Grizzlies just came down to the Spurs defense. Between Kawhi Leonard and Danny Green, they really just – hounded Mike Conley, hounded whoever was trying to handle the ball, and they really kept the Grizzlies from being able to run much of an offense. So that, you know, the looks that they were getting were not any good. That whatever halftime adjustment, I haven't really watched it that closely, but whatever halftime adjustment Popovich made with the defensive coverage is really what did it. You know, the Grizzlies were winning after one quarter. They were only down three at halftime, and they lost by 30. So, you know, I think what we kind of saw was what we see with the Grizzlies a lot, which is, you know, when things aren't going their way, they can't really fall back on execution. They don't really execute that well ever. And the Spurs are able to just kind of run through their sets and grind you up. Even if their matchups aren't very good individually, even if, you know, technically the Grizzlies should be able to get something going, they just can't. There's no, they can't get through the scheme.
Can't get through the team. That's the problem with the San Antonio Spurs. You know, one of the things that interested me a lot was the way that they defensed Mike Conley, for example. Sometimes Kawhi Leonard was on him. Sometimes, that kid Anderson, I think it was on him. And then Danny Green covered him a little bit. Tony Parker even took a turn or two. And they kept giving him so many different looks that it was very confusing, I think. That's part one. But the other thing is this. I'm gonna bring this up, because I think this is going to create an interesting discussion today. Marc Gasol is the best big man on the floor. No question. The best one on either team. They don't have a guard that should be able to even come close to Mike Conley. Whereas all they really have is Kawhi Leonard. And yet they win by 20.
Yeah. I mean, the problem is...
They're a team. That's what the problem is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a... Once you get past Gasol and Conley, the depth of this Grizzlies team, you know, without Tony Allen, without whatever hypothetical Chandler Parsons, you know, there's nobody else to handle the ball. I was reading Andrew Ford on Grizzly Bear Blues kind of breaking down some of the plays, and he pointed out that, you know, the Grizzlies bet on shooting instead of ball handling when they went with Troy Daniels as kind of that backup wing. You know, I think that was probably a poor decision in this series because there's no – if you don't have anybody else to bring the ball up the court and get them into sets, if Mike Conley is the only guy who can do that reliably, the Spurs have like six different ways to shut that down, and that's what you saw in the second half of Game 1. There's just – that you can't – I mean, to use what's the soccer, right, the soccer analogy, you can't alter the point of attack if you can't get that ball out of Conley's hands all the time. if you have Gasol bringing it up or whoever, it's not the same. You can't get into the offense as efficiently. So I just don't. It's a real depth issue. I really don't even know what Fizdale does to counter it. I'm not sure what you do.
Well, I think you got to run more brush screens and stuff like that at the top, off the elbow with Mark Gasol too. I think that you're going to have to see a lot more of a two-man game, and they're going to have to try to work to spring him, you know, like the Warriors did for Steph Curry last year, so he could become the unanimous MVP. Whether he was a unanimous MVP is up for debate. But the thing is they're going to have to try to do that. But, you know, you're looking at this freaking thing. This is a team, and this has always been. And, you know, one thing about the San Antonio Spurs, whether you love them or hate them, is it's team first, player second. Now, that's not to say that the Grizzlies aren't a team first, but there's times when it doesn't look like they are. I listened to the broadcast because I was working. And, okay, you know something? They were on David Fizdale. The Memphis people were on David Fizdale for calling a timeout in the second quarter. That's a rookie mistake. And I'm thinking to myself, well, you know what? Let him make them. This is at that point, Memphis was ahead. He was trying to stop the bleeding, for goodness sakes. San Antonio was coming back. Do you think Fizdale made mistakes in that game?
Yeah, I think he did, but none that
mattered to the game.
Yeah, none that I'm worried about. I mean, I think in terms of in-game adjustments, I don't think he did a good job reacting to within the game itself, reacting to what the Spurs were doing to disrupt the offense. I don't think he had a good counter. And playoff games are so much like chess. You know, you want to adjust within the game, but save some for the next game and that kind of thing. It's this is his first playoff series coaching in.
Of course. You said that last week.
Yeah. And so I expected him to get to totally outcoached at least once in the series. But, maybe it was game one and we'll see them a lot better from here on out. I don't know. I just know that, you know, basically that their game plan was okay and they executed it well in the first half, but when the Spurs countered it, they didn't continue to execute. You know, they started settling for the shots they were getting, which were like jump shots inside the 3-point arc, kind of mid-range twos. And that's all the Spurs were giving them. And they weren't really kind of, like you said, brush screens or, you know, pick and pop, that kind of stuff. They weren't doing it. They were kind of letting themselves get blown up. And then defensively on the other end, they just weren't, they just weren't covering shooters. They didn't help the way they do when they're playing well. It was really a tale of two halves, and the first half was really great and showed that they do have some ways to hurt the Spurs. One thing we haven't talked about yet, but Zach Randolph was terrible.
No, we haven't gotten to that yet. I'm working my way through this. Minus 39, well, Zach. Zeebo, minus 39 is not good. That's Portland Trailblazers crap. Thank you.
Yeah, not minus 39 in not anywhere near 39 minutes.
26 minutes and 3 for 13, by the way. 0 for 1 from behind the arc. What are you doing shooting behind the arc, Zeebo? That's what your own announcers were saying.
Yeah, well, that's because he was settling. That's what I was saying. He was just kind of settling for what was in front of him. You know, the Spurs have always done a good job of defending Zach. Popovich kind of figured him out after the 2011 playoffs.
Oh, yeah. But he came out of it last year a little bit, I thought.
Yeah, and he came out of it this year in the regular season. I mean, the thing is, you have to be able – he's got to be able to make shots against David Lee. If David Lee is going to outplay Zach Randolph, then
that's
the Grizzlies
trouble.
Might as well forfeit the next three games. Like, he has to be able to take advantage of having David Lee, having even LaMarcus Aldridge. He should be able to get his shot off, you know, and he's not. He wasn't. I think he was really subpar, and I think he let the fact that the Spurs were defending him well – take him out of his game and mentally in that second half. He just wasn't, he didn't look like he was moving with any sort of crispness. You know, I think he was just, I think he got rattled, which is not something that happens very often. And, you know, the Spurs were able to just run over him. You know, Conley and Gasol can't be the only two players that show up. And if they are, they're not, the Grizzlies are going to get swept if those two guys are the only two who score.
Well, they did show up. All of them did. They just didn't all show out. We don't want the listener who missed the game to think that they were the only two in Grizzly uniforms. We're going to give them all hell. But the reality is, if you put a Portland Trailblazers jersey on LaMarcus Aldridge, Zach would score 40 points on him. But for some reason, he's wearing a Spurs uniform and he doesn't. That doesn't make too much sense to me because it just doesn't. Now, the interesting thing about this game, though, and I was chatting with our friend J.R. Wilco before that game, and I said to him, I'm going to play Tony Parker at my thing, at my little FanDuel game, because Tony Parker's going to go off tonight. He goes off like once every five or six games, and he played a really good game. And that's the tough thing. But you know something? The other thing, I have a little note here. I think Mike Conley took way too many contested shots. He was trying to shoot over too many people, whereas instead of moving the ball and then looking and come popping off a screen, perhaps, those brush screens I alluded to earlier, and getting himself a better shot.
Yeah, I think that's definitely part of it, too. I can think of one or two floaters that he just forced and missed really badly because he was like way far out from the basket trying to shoot a floater.
But they were pressing though too. Let's give them a break. I think they were pressing a bit.
They really
believed. You know, I mean they put up, this was really strange. They had 49 points in the first half, Memphis did, and San Antonio had 52. That's usually like through three quarters when these two teams play. So it was kind of interesting.
Yeah, the Grizzlies, I think the stat, I think I retweeted it. The Grizzlies scored 30 points in the first quarter and then scored 32 points in the second and third quarter together.
Right, yeah, and only 18 in the fourth. And I remember that was awful, too.
Yeah, I think you brought up the press, and I think that's a big deal. You know, I think that was kind of the story of game one, is that they were able to press Conley and make him have to dump that ball off to Gasol or whoever else was back there to get out of the backcourt. And, you know, I think once that's fine. But once you do that, whoever has the ball has to come up and initiate your set. Right. And they weren't doing that. They were kind of just walking it up and waiting on Conley to come back and get it. And by that point, you've got 14 seconds on the shot clock and now you're starting your set and you're going to take your shot in the last 3 seconds of the shot clock and you're already losing at that point. You're forcing whatever because you're about to get a shot clock violation. I really think that, maybe you try some 2-point guard looks. I don't think that's necessarily the answer, but I do think, you know, you need to get Vince Carter back there or even Ennis, you know, somebody who is a little bit bigger, but can bring the ball up and at least start the set, you know. If they don't run their offense and they're just out there trying to create, that's when you see Conley, especially this year, get really stagnant and you end up with three guys standing around and Conley and Gasol are trying to pick and roll and do their two-man game thing. And, you know, at that point, the entire Spurs defense is in the paint. So your two-man game is not going to work.
Yep, that's a very good observation too. And, you know, I tell you what though, I like Wayne Seldon a little bit. We've never really talked about him on this show because there wasn't a whole lot to say.
Yeah.
But I think that if they, you know, he had a tough shooting night too. Vince Carter had scrap game one. It happens. And the truth is they just didn't play very good after the first quarter. And a lot of it had to do with the adjustments that San Antonio made. And some of it had to do with the lack of adjustments to the Spurs adjustments. So it's all good. Now, Fizdale's had a couple days. Coach Fizdale has had a couple days to sort it out, and I trust that he will. And if he doesn't, I'm going to chew him up for this because I'm going to give him a break for this whole game one.
I think the thing to remember about Wayne Seldon is that he had played 17 NBA games before starting a playoff game against the Spurs.
There you go. Thank you for bringing that up. We never talked about him one time. His name is never mentioned. Has never been mentioned one time here.
And I think he's a really good scorer and he's becoming a better defender, but you know, he's just a rookie. He just hasn't played that much. And he's obviously only carrying a significant workload because Tony Allen's out, you know, he's being asked to step up and do some things that he's definitely not ready to do. And I think everyone is willing to admit that.
He's an undrafted rookie, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. He's been in Iowa all year long. He was on the Grizzlies through training camp and stuff. So he was there in the preseason. He's not unfamiliar with what they're doing. But yeah, he's not seen much NBA action at all. And I thought, considering that, I thought he was pretty good, considering he's just getting thrown into a playoff game without having any idea what that even means. I think you're just kind of seeing how the Tony Allen injury weakens a wing rotation that was already pretty bad. And that's kind of the story of the series. I think if the Grizzlies lose, it's going to be because they could not get any production from the 2 and 3 spots. There's no playmaking. There's no scoring there. You can't expect 40-year-old Vince Carter to carry you through a playoff series. It's just not realistic. He's been great this year. Well, no, and he's been great this year, but it's the playoffs against the Spurs. You can't
count on what he signed up for. He signed up for 15 minutes a night, smile, hit a couple jumpers, and have a nice afternoon.
Yeah, yeah. Theoretically, this was supposed to be his last season. I don't think it's going to be, but I think you can use him a little more effectively, but it's not realistic to expect him to be your third best player. You know, he was never supposed to be that.
But he is.
He is, yeah.
Why? Because they put all their money into that other guy who probably will never play basketball again, for the Grizzlies anyway.
Yeah, and that's really biting you in this playoff series.
It's biting me now. Bit me when they signed him, remember? I wasn't too happy about that. But that's neither here nor there. You know something? You brought up Tony Allen. He is gone. We talked about this last week, that if the Grizzlies wanted to really have a legitimate chance of shutting down Kawhi Leonard, Tony Allen had to become 2010 first-team All-NBA defense, Tony Allen. He's not even there or dressed. He's not playing. We're not going to see him again in a Grizzlies uniform either, are we?
I would not bet money on it. It's possible that they sign him, but it depends on what kind of deal he's pushing for and what kind of direction the Grizzlies want to go in. I mean, it's totally possible that Dallas game, whatever, last week was the last time he's in a Grizzlies uniform.
Yeah, that'd be a shame, too. But you know what? We've been led toward that the entire season. They're telling us something. When they brought in David Fizdale, I knew when they fired Dave Yeager that they were getting ready to cut the grit and grind era loose.
I think that's what they want to do. You know, I definitely think that's what Fizdale wants to do. I think he's looking around right now saying, what am I supposed to do with this roster?
How do I exercise the ghosts of Christmas past?
Yeah, you mean of Chris Wallace past?
Well, whoever. Well, yeah, I was trying to be generous, but yes. Okay, if you want me to be specific, yeah, him.
Maybe that's not totally fair because he wasn't in charge of all those decisions. But yeah, you know, I think Fizdale...
I can hear the sound of an email from Grizzlies PR hitting your box in about 2 hours.
It's possible. It wouldn't be the first time this year.
I would think so. Or last year. We got in worse trouble last year, though.
Yeah, we did. We definitely got in worse trouble last year. I think everybody admits that we're telling the truth this year. I think Fizdale, look, Yeager had the same complaints, right? The problem with Yeager is he made them publicly and threw the players under the bus. But this team is pretty old and they're pretty slow and they're extremely limited in their shooting and their execution comes and goes, even Gasol and Conley. Your best players on your team aren't committed to, you know, executing with precision, which is something that the Spurs are great at. They just fall back on running their sets and they win. I've been saying that all year. They have to change how they play if they're really ever going to be better. And I'm just not sure that this group of players can change how they play at this point. They've been doing it for too long. And I think Fizdale is kind of, if I had to bet, I don't know this, but I'm sure he's looking around saying, I don't have 3 more games worth of adjustments up my sleeve because the team I have is the team I have.
That's a good point. You know, you're right, or he's right if he's thinking that. And because I have high confidence in Coach David Fizdale so far, I have to think he does, you know, because, what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, we'll get in trouble again today, probably, for sure. But you know something? There aren't any other aces up his sleeve. Here's what has to happen. Marc Gasol has to play like he did last week or last game, but he has to play at even a higher level. Mike Conley got to get it done. Mike Conley's got to have one of those 30 and 10 nights with about 4 or 5 steals. because Kawhi's going to go off again.
Yeah, there's nobody can guard him very well.
Who guards him on that team? Vince Carter?
Yeah. Vince was trying.
No, I'm not being derogatory. I think Vince tried. He tried hard. Wayne Seldon?
Yeah, I mean that's not what I would want to do.
Nobody wants to. That's the whole point. Because the grindfather's not there, it's not a good thing. See, this is one of the things about the grit and grind era. And I know people don't like it when we bring this stuff up. I don't really care what they like. Is that they never looked to find replacements for these guys. They never did. They just kept bringing in older dudes and whatever.
They need a young Tony Allen now, and they don't have one.
Yeah, who's the young Tony Allen on this team? James Ennis?
He's an okay defender, but he's not that good.
Nah, Tony Allen...
He's definitely not there.
Tony Allen was a great defender right out of the box, first day in the NBA.
Yeah.
He's a different era type player, though, too. Let's not forget that. These young guys, they don't play defense. None of them.
Well, you know, I think Harrison's a good defender, but Harrison's problem, if you want to compare him to Tony Allen, is Tony Allen is a freak athlete. And his lateral quickness and his ability to fight through screens is just, I've never seen anything like it. And Andrew Harrison is slow. You know, he just can't move like that.
He kind of fits the grit and grind era. He would have been great a few years ago.
Yeah, and he's been okay this year as a backup point guard, but, you know, asking him to defend guys the same way that Tony Allen does, he's just not fast enough to do it, just flat out.
Well, I wouldn't put him on Kawhi anyway.
Yeah,
because I don't want the kid to have nightmares all summer long, because Kawhi's doing his thing, and Kawhi's so efficient, too. But this has been an interesting thing, so we've kind of diced up this whole thing, but I gotta laugh. The Clippers, the Los Angeles Clippers, is really funny, but over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been referring to them as a paper tiger, and because they just lose games, and I don't know why they do. Rudy Gobert is out probably for the series. At least he was out game one. More than likely, they'll keep him out for the series because he's valuable to that team. And the Clippers lost to Utah.
Yeah.
At home.
I watched that.
Too funny.
I mean, Joe Johnson, right?
Joe. I used to call him Sloppy Joe, though, because he's just whatever. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, he's that's kind of where I was going. He's gotten so much hate for being an ISO Joe, but at the same time, it still works.
Of course it does.
There's really no excuse to lose to the Utah without Rudy Gobert if you're the Clippers, right? You should just run everything through DeAndre Jordan and just have him dunk on every single possession because there's nobody to stop him.
They're all too selfish for that.
Yeah, you know, Doc Rivers, master NBA coach. So.
Oh, stop. He's not even... Brad Stevens, you know what? If you're listening to the show, I ranked you higher than I ranked Doc Fisher. Or Doc whatever.
Yeah, it's... I think the issue with the Clippers is it's really kind of the same issues the Grizzlies have. As much as those two teams hate each other, the issue is that they have two guys who are really good and a bunch of guys who are good about 50% of the time, and they're never all good at the same time.
Never. Glenn Doc Rivers, what a team. What a coach. I can't tell them on air, but I heard some funny stories about that championship team from a guy who played on it. And, it's interesting stuff. But you know something? His teams are all like that. They got to bust that team up. You know, we talk all the time about the Grizzlies and how we have to bust them up, or how they're going to get busted up. But I got to tell you, I would rather be the Grizzly fan than a Clippers fan because that team sucks. Blake Griffin is the most overrated all-star, superstar, if you will, I've ever seen in the NBA.
You know, at this point, I don't even know if it's fair to say that because he's never been on a team that can help him. You know what I mean? Chris Paul is, for all of the stats stuff that he does, I've yet to see evidence that he's actually a good leader of a team.
Well, I don't think he's a good leader. Stats and leadership are two different things, though.
Yeah, I know. That's what I mean. He's there's just such a culture of like griping about everything, and I think it comes from him. I would love to see what Blake Griffin could do on some other team with different players, because that's the only way I think I could be able to judge whether he's any good or not. You know, to me, the issue there is that I mean, in terms of which team would you rather have, I would rather be the Grizzlies simply because I just don't trust Doc Rivers to be a good general manager. Like the guy, it's the Chris Wallace thing, right? Who is the guy running the show going to be the guy that you trust to actually put together a new team? And I would much rather be in the Grizzlies situation, even owing the draft pick that they owe, than the Clippers, because I don't know how they get better fast. I think they would have to do a total teardown. And I don't think the Grizzlies are necessarily in that situation. They've got some young guys.
They do. But you know what, though? They also got some guys. I think they're going to bust that team up, too. It could be interesting. You know what? Blake Griffin could wind up with the Grizzlies.
How funny would that be? He would probably throw batteries at him.
Oh, yeah. But you know what, though? They would probably be throwing batteries at us. Because I still don't think he'd be any good for this team, but that was crazy. You know the much ballyhooed game between Harden and Westbrook? That backcourt, my God, I never seen a team shoot that bad. They were like 6 for 40, him and Oladipo.
Yeah, it was rough.
Gosh.
It was rough. I knew Houston was gonna jump on them in a big way. Just defensively, I've never had faith in the Thunder at all. And so when you throw them against a Houston team that has so many versatile weapons, can attack you in so many different ways, not to mention the shooting, you know. I don't think the Thunder have much of a chance at all in that series.
Well, when Andre Robertson is your second leading scorer,
yeah,
you're in big trouble.
And he's not defending well. I mean, he's kind of got a reputation as a good defender, but Harden sliced and diced him
this time, but over the course of the last two seasons he hasn't.
That's what I mean, he's got to play like himself for them to even have a chance.
Look at this. I'm looking at their box score. 6 for 23 for Westbrook, 1 for 12 for Oladipo. Wow, I'm surprised he let him chuck that many. But then Billy Donovan's not really the coach of that team anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter. But that's something else. I'm curious about it. Look at this. Harden was 13 for 28. Of course, no one was guarding him, so I guess that's not bad. My goodness. They carved him up.
I think it looks to me like Clippers-Jazz is probably going to be the only very interesting first-round series. I mean, I think the Blazers, you saw Lillard and McCollum score like 70-something points. That's probably the best the Blazers can actually play.
75 of their 109 points were scored by their backcourt.
Yeah, that's been Portland all year long. We've talked about it a lot. I don't think there's any way that they're not going to get past the Warriors. Like it's just not happening. But I don't even know that they're ever going to be in another game that's that close. Unless both of those guys can score 50 points, I don't see it happening.
Lillard had 34 points and 3 assists, and McCollum had 41 points, 1 assist and 8 rebounds. Look at this. Portland had 15 assists in game 1. 15 assists in game 1 and scored 109 points.
It's crazy.
They're a bunch of guns. That's what I try to tell them. Their fan base, they hated me for saying it because they know everything in Portland, as you probably have already heard. I'm sure Zach Randolph probably told you a few things too. But seriously, these guys are nothing but chuckers. Golden State, let me see, because assists matter to me. They had 26 assists.
Didn't really play well in the first half. Golden State didn't. I didn't think they played well until the second half.
Can you imagine? I didn't even realize that, but 15 assists is not a lot of teamwork. No wonder they suck. Anyway, they got into the thing. That's okay. But you know something? Game 2 is tonight. I don't know when you're going to hear this out there. Some of you will probably be hearing it this afternoon. But I think I see a victory in the Grizzlies' future. I don't know when that's going to be, though. It could be next year against the Spurs. But one thing is clear. Tune in tonight, 9:30 Eastern, right, Kevin?
Yeah, 8:30 Memphis time.
There you go. For Kevin Leib, I'm Phil Nasons. We want to thank you for listening to Beyond the Arc.